You are now listening to Talking Transparency, the podcast where trans parents talk transparently, hosted by Cody Connor and Melissa Lukson.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Melissa.
I'm Cody.
I'm Thea.
On today's episode, we are talking transparently with Heather St. Amand.
Hey, y'all.
As a political consultant and field strategist for progressive Democratic candidates in both Virginia and Florida, Heather St. Amand brings a unique perspective to the table. Her genuine left-wing politics stand out in the Democratic Party, offering a fresh approach to political strategy. Beyond her professional endeavors, Heather's a devoted mother to a trans daughter and actively volunteers for numerous nonprofit organizations. She also serves on the boards of two, demonstrating her commitment to making a positive impact both within and beyond the political sphere. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Yeah. Before we get into talking with Heather, let's take a look at the events that we got coming up. Next event is March 28th. That's our financial literacy workshop hosted by Mel Howard from Thriving Trans Men of Color. I love thriving.
I know, me too.
March 29th is Trans Day of Visibility event. That's in Norfolk at the Southeastern Transgender Resource Center. It runs from 11 to 5 p.m. and then it's followed by a mini ball.
Yes, from 8 to late.
8 to late.
8 to late.
All right.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I may not be able to make the 11 for work, but try and go to the ball.
Exactly. If people can't make it during the day, I mean, I know, come out to the ball. It's going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be cash prizes. So, you know, if you're trans and you're thinking you want to come out, just walk the ball. You've never done it before. Come out. It'll be fun. It'll be awesome.
And April 21st is the next trans family dinner. April 25th is our Know Your Rights workshop at the Creative Reuse Center.
Yes.
And then on May 19th, we have our May Trans Family Dinner along. And then on the 23rd, we'll have the t-shirt making workshop. I feel like I'm missing
you
something.
You skipped April 27th, the D&D Club.
I skipped the D&D Club. We also have, this won't be out by then. Say we have the D&D Club coming up this weekend.
And then also, I think next Tuesday, we also have FemFest. But I don't know. We'll see if this is out by then. Okay. Yeah,
we'll see. If not, then we had
April
a good time.
27th.
Go to events.kaylascoalition.com/events to find out all the details. Yes. In case you're curious.
But yes, May 25th is the May D&D Club. And then this month, 26th, FemFest. If you can get out to that, if this is out in time, that would be awesome. All right. I think that's all we got going on the calendar right now.
Oh. All right. Let's see here. I am really excited. Also, we should mention about Outwork 757. I know that Eric House and the everyone over there, I put a ton of work into that. There's going to be a great opportunity for people who are looking for work or are looking for information about that sort of stuff. I just want to give a shout out to them as well. Absolutely. That should be happening. What is this?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
But it's actually on tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Let's see. Now, thanks, Cody. Thank you for joining us tonight, Heather. So could you share your journey into political consulting and highlight that unique approach or different principles that have guided you and set your strategies apart from other consultants? Because, you know, I'm kind of spicy when it comes to consultants. Political consultants are not my favorite.
But, I know. Same.
Ooh, mine either. So I get it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, how I even got involved in politics in the first place, like in my 20s, I was oblivious. Mm-hmm. And then I was a mom and then a single mom to a small child. Mm-hmm. I was not paying attention to literally anything.
Same.
2008-ish with Obama, or I guess, you know, leading up to Obama, I bought in lock, stock, and barrel to hope and change. That was like my foray into paying attention to politics.
Okay.
And so I did a little bit of volunteering, you know, of my time. Didn't get real deep into it. Mm-hmm. You know, he had his two terms. There were things I would have done differently.
Sure.
But, you know, I digress. Here we are.
Yeah.
When prior to actually the 2016 election, I was like, what is even happening right now? How is this possible that we have Trump as, you know, the Republican nominee and everything that was going on? Like, I had watched The Apprentice.
Me too.
That was a guilty pleasure for a while.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy him as a person.
Me either.
He was terrible.
I just love good reality TV.
Yeah. So, you know, I was single mom at the time. needed to make a little extra money. I, you know, had changed careers a few times, you know, mm-hmm. and was in school at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, you know what, let me do something that's kind of like a low lift so I can do my schoolwork and, you know, do something else. Well, mm-hmm. a friend of mine was very politically engaged and was working on, you know, campaigns and stuff. And so I'm like, you know what can I do? You know, how can I get involved? She's like, well, we need canvassers. So that's how I started. Oh. I started knocking doors prior to the 2016 election.
Okay.
And it wasn't even so much, I wasn't like knocking doors for Hillary. Mm-hmm. I was knocking doors to tell people about fracking and tell people about the amendments that were going to be on the ballot in our specific, you know, county and in Florida in general.
Okay.
Because I was in Florida at the time.
Yeah.
So I was just going to educate voters. I absolutely fell in love with it. At first, I was like, you want me to knock on doors and talk to people?
I literally hate knocking on doors.
Yeah.
And, but like for an issue?
Yes.
That's different.
Than a candidate.
Than a candidate.
Yes.
Interesting.
So that's how I got into it. And so I was still going to school. And I'm like, mm-hmm. you know what? I'm going to just keep volunteering. I had the ability to do that mm-hmm. at the time. So I just kept volunteering and getting real deep into like local politics in Tampa, in Hillsborough County, and in Pasco County.
Okay.
A little bit in Pinellas. That came later. And just worked my way up. And I'm like, I want to be an organizer. What they do is really cool. How do I do that?
Mm.
So I volunteered a lot of hours
mm-hmm.
for, you know, a year or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got my first organizing job. And I was working to get Amendment 4 on the ballot in Florida. And that was the amendment to return voting rights to 1.5 million returning citizens.
Oh, okay.
And again, it was going out talking to people.
Hmm.
This was directly after, you know, the 2016 election. Also, 2 weeks after that, my daughter came out to me as trans. That changed everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I needed to stay in the space that I was in and talk to people.
Yeah.
Because it was either that or I was going to curl up in a corner in a cocoon and say, oh my God, the world sucks. Everyone's awful. What am I going to do? My child is not going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? My child is amazing. I'm going to get out there and talk to other people and make sure she has what she needs.
Yeah.
So I continue doing like issue-based ideas. I was able to help. I'm very proud of it. Able to help get Amendment 4 on the ballot.
Awesome.
And my daughter was the top petition getter in Florida.
Stop.
To help get that on the ballot. That's awesome. at the you know, age of 13.
I was going
to
say how old. Yeah.
She was 12, then 13.
Okay.
During that time frame. So she was heavily into that and she had some tough conversations and I was just in awe.
Mm.
So I did that and you know how, electoral work and anything like that is cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
You have a job for a little amount of time and then it's gone. You have this job with great pay, great benefits. You're going 90 miles an hour and then it just stops like you hit a wall.
Wow. Yeah. See, in Virginia, we have elections every year.
I love that.
So it's and people, I mean, we are constantly in like election fatigue. I mean, we have no breaks here.
Yeah.
So that's and advantageous, I guess.
I actually appreciate that. Right? Living here. That's good for me.
Job security. I was going to say
job security for you.
Yeah. But so we actually worked then to get the amendment passed.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I started dipping my toe into, all right, I have a candidate that I really do want to get out and knock doors for, mm-hmm. and that was Andrew Gillum.
Okay.
I am still not over 2018. I'm mm-hmm. still not over him losing that election. Yeah. Florida would be a much different state right now
mm-hmm.
had he won. But I digress. Once that happened, I was a little, you know, disenchanted with mm-hmm. things.
I'm a sore loser, too.
I am. That's why I will bring it up. I always bring it up. I'm awful.
Like, I'm not a sore loser. Like, I'm going to smash stuff. But, like, I'm a sore loser. Like, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
Don't talk to me, but then I'm going to say something about it.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I actually moved into labor from there and worked for a union.
Okay.
And it was the same thing. I was helping adjunct professors form mm-hmm. and win their unions all over the state of Florida. Mm. So that was just another piece of the puzzle of going and speaking mm-hmm. to people.
Yep.
About things that affect them. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my jam.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to know what's important to you.
Did you start, so through that work, like for me getting into politics, it was actually just showing up and speaking at a task force meeting and then speaking at a city council meeting and then speaking at a school board meeting and then me realizing that so many elected officials are dumb. And so I was like, huh, this not only is it kind of fun telling you you're dumb, but I might be able to make a little bit of change here. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a little bit of, and all the politicians in this city know, like, their buttholes pucker up when I'm walking up to the mic because they have, most of them have no idea what is about to come out of my mouth. And they're like, please don't be directed at me. But that's the fun for me in politics, right? I love talking to people, mm-hmm. but like, when did you start transitioning into like talking to elected officials or kind of making gone into that space?
Oh yeah. I was in the background.
Okay.
The very first thing I did was speak at the legislative delegation in Hillsborough County.
Okay.
And I was speaking on, healthcare for trans youth mm-hmm. on Medicaid. I wanted to make sure mm-hmm. that they were able to get the support that they needed. Mm-hmm. Because I knew at that time, I was a single mom in school working, you know, mm-hmm. part-time hours. This is before I actually got the first organizer job. And I was on Medicaid at the time. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was on Medicaid at the time. Mm-hmm. We were lucky. From day one, she had the best support. I'm so lucky.
Wow.
In the state of Florida that happened during that time frame when she needed it.
During
it was there.
That time frame, that's important.
That's exactly it. And mm-hmm. so we had a team of doctors. Everyone worked together. I wanted to make sure everyone else had access to that.
Yeah.
So I started speaking at the legislative delegations. I did, you know, I did Hillsborough County, Pasco County, Pinellas County. Mm-hmm. They got so sick of me. Mm.
Love that.
And then, like you, I moved on to school board because my daughter was a student mm-hmm. and I wanted to make sure that she could use the bathroom, be comfortable, mm-hmm. do the things she needed to do. And luckily, they had a wonderful school psychologist, like over all the mm-hmm. schools in the county. They had the school board superintendent, even though he was a conservative, protected my kid and kids like her.
That's great.
The policies that they had in place, mm-hmm. everything was as it should be. Her pronouns were, mm-hmm. you know, respected. Mm-hmm. Her name, respected. She was not dead named.
Yeah.
She was able to use, you know, mm-hmm. the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And everything was fine.
Up until.
But people were starting to make noise.
Yep.
And we had a coach in one of the schools that was awful and made a whole scene about someone in a locker room. And so then I ended up at the school board meetings every single meeting, and it would be me at first mm-hmm. with a room full of bust-in
conservative
mm-hmm. churchgoers.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, it sounds so
I feel like
familiar.
I've been in that scene before.
I mean, I feel like this scene is just so familiar. Florida to Virginia.
Imagine.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. So I you know, I did all that, and then I started working more seriously on campaigns. And because I was working for organizations instead of for myself,
yeah,
you have to push the candidate mm-hmm. that they tell you to.
Oh, I'm aware. Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of that. And I worked my way up mm-hmm. to director level. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the West Central Florida regional director for Future Florida.
Okay.
They did give me leeway on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. like my issues and the things that I did outside of election time. Mm-hmm. But when it was election time, it was election time. And I had to push who we were funded.
Of course.
To push.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's the way I went with it. Unfortunately, once things started going sideways in Florida, funding started getting pulled from the progressive organizations because the funders in DC or wherever else they were from are like, it's a lost cause here. We're going to put our money somewhere else.
And was DeSantis in office already at that point? Okay. And when did DeSantis go in office? When did
2018.
It was 2018.
Yes.
And you know, Charlie Crist really didn't have a chance in unseating him, did he?
No. And I'm still angry that they propped him up there.
Yep. That's what the Democrats do. It was
just another old white man.
Yeah.
That was a Republican. He was a Republican when he was governor before.
Yeah, because he was governor before, right? Yeah.
And he was a Republican that actually didn't have terrible policies.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, it doesn't surprise me speaking on because there's some of these people just are married to this identity of being a Republican. But like when you really break down their policies, you're like, oh, okay, bro. It's just a title. Like, I mean, at this point, because your policies are much more left-leaning. Charlie Crist was still like a
very centrist.
Yeah,
extremely.
So DeSantis got in 2018.
Yes.
So this all, like, what happened with the progressives when DeSantis got in? Is that kind of when everybody was like, oh, it's over?
A lot of the funding stopped. Mm-hmm. And people just kept, the Florida Dems keep pushing establishment candidates. Mm-hmm. It's maddening.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because Republicans have, I love Pavlov's dog. Like they are, the analogy with that, like they have been trained. Like they're trained to respond with candidates that they think can beat them instead of actually putting up candidates that actually speak to the people. They're putting up candidates that speak to the Republican or like compete with Republicans. It's not really about the people. It's not putting up the best candidates for the people. And we experience that here.
And I always wonder how much of that is down to the interior analysts and the consultants and the data that they're getting. Because like I have to imagine that there's some informed reason aside from this is just the policies and politics we want to or don't want. Because when they pull money out and they say we aren't winning down there, there's no way to win.
Yeah,
they're informing that metrics. Based off of data and metrics. I'd like to believe, just to be clear, I think it's not – don't get me wrong. I've also seen just the vicious cut across the progressive wing that happens sometimes, the way that funding will evaporate. Mm-hmm. Or how it'll just magically end up with someone who also is a multimillionaire. But I digress. It's weird, and I just wonder how much of that actually. I don't know.
For Florida, I can tell you a lot of it came from obviously, you know, data informed decisions. A lot of it's because after the pandemic, during and after the pandemic, the sheer amount of folks that moved to Florida. Conservatives, heavily conservatives from New York, from California. That want, and they have money. So between them and developers, prices have been driven up for everything. They are pricing people out of their home. Like, I don't know that I could go
back
now.
Well, in insurance, it's
ridiculous.
It's hard to, you know, insure your homes. I mean, like the policies, so much of policies from the 80s, we're totally seeing the results of that now. And which kind of, let me just address the whole like metrics thing too, because I kind of joke now, like I'm not going to argue with somebody with a poli-sci degree anymore about like these numbers, right? Like I feel like politics focuses too much on numbers, too much on precinct data, right? And they say, based on this data, we're not going to fund this amazing candidate that you might have, right? Because they're more progressive and the metrics doesn't work. Instead of actually investing in this great candidate and putting money in there to get them the visibility and put them in the community. But like, I don't know about Republican politics, but what I do know about Democrat politics when it comes to running campaigns, it's about call time, knocking doors. I mean, knocking doors is one thing, which I totally think that that is an outdated method of, if you're not the candidate, I feel like we need more community and like community action, right? But I think there's a place for it, but there's not enough. It's just like, well, the metrics aren't good, so we're not going to put the money into you, and you're not going to put the visibility, and you're not even going to invest in this person when you actually could potentially win. Like you, and plus the environment, like you have to take into account the changes in the political atmosphere, and then go after everybody in the district, not just Democrats. Like so many Democrats, they're like, we're just going to go after the strong D's in the van. And I'm like, but there's all these independents and like these lean Republicans. And like, knowing what I know, I mean, if you looked at my voting record, like I was so not an informed voter. And what I said this to a Republican today, I said, if you're a Republican, or if you're somebody who tells me you vote for a Republican, I just think you're either self-interested or uninformed. Because when I voted for Republicans, I was uninformed. And I'll absolutely admit it. I was the voter that was like, oh, I saw a lot of that person's signs. I have no idea about their politics.
but you know who is informed?
Who?
These analysts and consultants. A lot of them have great educations. They have tons of resources. Some of them, yeah. And the thing that gets me about it is like, I do think that metrics bear out certain things. You don't want to be putting money into a
debt
call. I mean, that makes obvious sense. But I do think that we overeducate it. And we overeducate it. And then we also over rely on certain people. And the other thing about it is that numbers, no matter which way you put them, you can put them on pages, rearrange them however you want, also tell a story. Mm-hmm. That story is not without its own implicit bias from the person who wrote it. And I think when we talk about different models, we talk about different systems, and we talk about different ways to analyze data, it's impossible to divorce that from that ideology. And sometimes, as much as I would love to believe that we are making raw, objective decisions, I do think that it doesn't come down to that. I've seen too many amazing candidates in Texas, in Tennessee, here in Virginia, and obviously across Florida, and different states that have these different conservative bands, very red areas, or sometimes even purple-red areas, you know? And it's not the unwilling and the loss to not just their community, but those state houses, and then ultimately the future roster of Democratic leadership, because there's a pipeline. We can all sit here and talk about the pipeline. Yeah. I went to George Mason University for a short period of time. I was in policy debate for a while. I got to get to know a lot of interesting people who went on to become get into politics. And it was it's very fascinating how you go in through and how you get groomed and how you get positioned and how if you fall off that track, you fall off that track, and how ultimately the goal of it is either going to become a candidate or end up at is it McKinsey is the goal. And I think that pipeline is very dangerous for the country and for the Democratic Party. And I wish that more people who have been on that pipeline, who understand that pipeline, could see the damage that it's causing, that we have too many lawyers in Congress.
Way
we have
too many lawyers.
People who we do not have the ability to speak to people in a way like Cody can speak to people in the way that Melissa, you speak to people, things that are different, shocking, jarring, full of love and insight. And that's the perspective and crucible that democracy demands, and we lack it because I don't want to say they're overprepared, but maybe that's one way to view it.
Oh, we have very few leaders that I see really from the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even when you look at the local level, because when people think about, groomed politicians, rich politicians, you know, they think congressmen and senators. But even when you look at the local level, because I was looking at this recently for my district, District 8. There's several candidates already,
you know,
running for 2026 or the possibly the special election, which is really what they're running for. But all of them kind of have some of the same things in common. They own businesses. None of them are living in the apartment complex of my district.
That's right.
That's,
yep.
That's not a part of what's going on. And so what you have, and you even see this with the current candidate.
Yep.
You know, Chris Taylor, I know a bit about how he grew up.
Yep.
And his life. And going straight from upper middle class, fairly well off, to paid for college, to my own business that I'm sure nobody helped him create. And
well, technically, that I don't think that's true.
Yeah. That,
I mean, he was gifted property, which property is assets.
That's what I'm saying.
A
like
a small loan of $100,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Just a small loan of $1 million. No, nothing. No help at all.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not a real world experience.
That's correct.
For most of the population.
That's right.
You never had to really go work for somebody. You never had to be in a position where you decided what bills you were paying, or maybe you didn't pay some.
Yep.
You've never had to catch the bus somewhere.
No.
You know, and so I think that's one of the biggest problems we have in politics, in our leadership in general, is basically none of our leaders have actually lived in the real world they're making decisions for.
Well, right, because they've made politics where the salaries, unless you're on a federal level, you have to be independently wealthy, retired, or self-employed. It's politics, elected office is not for the common folk, as they would call it. The peasants should not rule in this town.
Oh my goodness.
And that's what that comes from is, we're going to go back to the consultants. They make amazing money for their knowledge. Meanwhile, I'm driving a 2008 Nissan but it's because they're like, oh well, I know that they can pay, so let me go ahead and I'll run your campaign for you.
Oh, it's worse than that, Heather. You know that a lot of them sit on the boards, the local and state and national boards, and they have unauditable contracts, and they're able to vote on their own contracts 9 times out of 10, and they're going to keep voting in certain ways that benefit the businesses and the establishments they've set up. And that pipeline has kept money, political money, out of the hands of black leadership, young leadership, trans and queer leadership. And ultimately, it has hurt the Democratic Party far more than anybody who has stayed at home when they were, you know, what is it, 27 years old or 21 years old. I mean, I want to get those people out to the polls. They need to come out to those. Please come out to the polls if you're listening. But also, like, I know why you're not, because you don't see yourself represented within not just the candidates, because there's a certain tokenization that exists there, but also within the larger institutions that serve. And we've seen changes in the past several days. I don't want to sit here and say that we haven't. I'm just saying we need more of it, and we need also more sunlight. We need more people like Heather. I'm sorry, I didn't catch you off it.
Oh, no, you're fine. I appreciate your insight. Yeah, no, but like, from my perspective, it's a candidate problem.
I agree.
It's wholly a candidate problem.
Okay.
And I think that the thing that my partner and I do differently than other consultants is that we make it our problem to find a better candidate.
Right.
When these people want to put their establishment, you know, candidates up, I feel like we have somebody better in that district. Let's go into the community. Let's speak to community leaders. Let's, you know, see if we can get a real grassroots effort around somebody that represents us.
Right. That's been very challenging here in Virginia Beach, because for at least the Democrats in this city, candidates, it's been challenging. To whereas, like, the Republicans, you got a pulse. You like, we'll fund you.
We'll
tell
you
what to do. We'll give you the talking points.
You need a place to move into this neighborhood so that you can run for this particular seat. Sure.
Literally. Hello, the freaking chief of staff of the Senator Newcraig, literally, like, real estate agent, and Senator Newcraig and her chief of staff have literally, like, property swap. You can see how they have had, like, similar same addresses, and they're not related. It's freaking wild to me. And it's so disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And it's all about power. And it's all about money. And I think one of the things that the establishment doesn't like about me, per se, as an activist and an advocate, is that, like, I don't need shit from you. And I don't want shit from you. I do this in what I do because I actually care. And that drives them nuts. Because you can't take anything from me. And I don't want anything from you except for you to do the right thing. So we've had a very difficult time with finding good candidates that are willing to put themselves out there. Because politics has gotten so, I mean, it's just been like in the last couple of years that we have people that are willing to put yard signs out. Like you say to a Democrat, like they'll say, oh my gosh, I love my, you know, I love Cody. And then I'll go, oh, I'm out of early voting. Would you like a yard sign? And they're like, oh no, I'm surrounded by Republicans. I could not put a sign in my yard. And I'm like, okay. Like, and I understand, you know what I mean? I get that. Like, but if our elected officials aren't willing to speak up about other elected officials when they're not doing the right thing or there's ethical challenges, you know what I mean? Or just to stand up instead of playing this backdoor politics, like, oh, I'd rather do it behind the scenes. Well, behind the scenes isn't getting anything done. Mm-mm. So how are you when you are when you're talking to candidates? Because I don't think you're, I mean, you and I seem to be very, like, similar in our, like, values and things, which isn't really popular in even current day politics, even though we're in 2024. It should be.
Well, I remedy that by not taking on clients whose values don't align with mine. Mm-hmm. I don't do it. Yep. That's why I'm not independently wealthy from this.
Right.
And I really, like, we really do send out, like, questionnaires.
Yeah.
And have a sit down and all yeah. that to make sure values align and, mm-hmm. You know, sorry.
And you're still working in Florida though with some candidates or no? Okay.
Yes.
So you had to leave the state of Florida because DeSantis came in, and he rode the political wave of hate and discontent. With his little white boots that, oh, God, he's so cute. Awkward. His fake smile. Y'all, I can't even with his fake smile.
It's so painful.
And you know what? Like, I really, like, he's a monster. But, like, I also feel like, I don't know, he might be a little neurodivergent or something.
There's something going on.
There's something. There's, and, like, and there, I just.
There's, he needs feel some like, hugs somewhere. That's,
yeah, there's something going on there. And, like, and then I just feel like he was just kind of captured up and gobbled up and then just, you know,
I don't know. As much as I don't want to like put any dispersions on the divergence yeah, or anything, no, no. I do think it might just be soul damage.
Could be
from all the time at Guantanamo Bay.
Could be.
I feel like that probably, you know, when you like force feed Muslims like pork, and milk and every, like you do all of that.
Oh yeah, no, that's like
I think that kind of like it just comes.
I mean,
back
that's just
you.
Psychopathy. You can't get away from it. Like, I mean, yeah,
he possibly. Could have just forgot how to smile because he was trying to remember that Uber Eats delivers groceries.
I mean, that's it, right? That's what it is. That's what it is. And so he kind of, I mean, I never would have known who Ron DeSantis was had it not been for his terrible policies. You know, I mean, I wasn't paying attention to what was going on in Florida, really, and so. At what point did you say, like, this is not safe anymore? You went from having amazing support mm-hmm. when they came out initially. Mm-hmm. And then you did that care deteriorated or it became more challenging? Like, what was that like for you?
Once he passed legislation,
okay,
making it so that trans youth could no longer access gender affirming care, mm-hmm. I knew adults were next.
Mm. Yeah.
I knew it was coming. They're still trying to do things.
Yeah.
And I knew that my daughter wasn't safe anymore. And as much as it pained me, mm-hmm. because even in the midst of all of that, we have such a beautiful community there.
Right.
Like an amazing community. Right. And right. I love them all.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's honestly
the hardest part. Yeah.
Leaving them and leaving my parents was the hardest part for me. But yeah, once that happened, and then I knew that she wasn't even going to be able to go to the bathroom in public that corresponded with her gender identity. We just flew to Tampa for the Pride, you know, that I sit on the board of for our festival. We got there, and when we were on the air side, we got off the plane. She goes, "Oh, I got to go to the bathroom." I said, "Me too." Go to go in, and she goes, "I just realized, I remembered, I can get hate crimes for going in this bathroom." She said, "So let me hold it." And she held it. Thankfully, when we went down to baggage, they had family bathrooms there. So she was able to utilize that one. But that just really slapped me in the face and reminded me, oh.
That's why I moved.
We're back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, and those laws are getting worse.
Yeah.
Oh. You know,
I was reading... they're trying to pass a whole slate of laws in Missouri that will make it to where bathrooms, any public bathroom, bathroom in any public building, anything like that, are only segregated based on biological sex.
Like, is there somebody standing at the door? What is happening?
Yeah. No,
they're trying to mandate it, even trying to eliminate the ability to have non-gendered bathrooms.
I mean, like, what would happen if I was at a bar and I just... I mean, do you know how many times I have gone into the men's bathroom?
Same.
And do you... Oh, my gosh. I think I've said this before, but men are always, like, so freaked out if there's urinals. And I'm like, nobody wants to look at your tiny dick. Like... I mean, I don't know why you're so upset. Like, I'm going into the stall to pee. What is wrong with you? But they get mad. Like, they're like, this is not the women's room. I'm like, there's a line. Y'all don't have a line.
Well, and it's just this strange, you know, concept that, because this is, it really is how it is. Like, men in that space... And it's not that this is unjustified, but it's that it's so prevalent that men look at all other men as predators and even in certain scenarios view themselves as one.
Wild. Yeah.
When you really think about it, it's like, who came up with the idea of a men's room? It's like, it had to be some, like, super, like, broided up patriarchal angry dude who's like, yeah, we're going to have our own separate bathroom. And guess what? We're not going to have walls. And everyone's going to have their weirs hanging out. We're all going to have to pee together.
Whoever's,
and you're all going to have to feel comfortable. Like, someone who just had a massive, I'm just sorry.
It's really so wild to me because I'm like, it's just, especially the urinals thing. Like, what?
What's funny is you really look at the scenario. And you have all of these conservative
men, straight with the dicks men. Out.
This is men's women's bathrooms. Can you imagine when this was coming about? Like, there was that one guy that was like, "Oh yeah, definitely, we should all pee together, standing right next to each other." Oh no, we can have the stalls, barriers. But there must be spaces for us to look through, just so if you know if somebody's in there.
Oh, it's.
I think this is a great idea.
And then if you stand next to the other guy. The implicit implication that you must be gay.
To, to me, it sounds a lot like how white Jesus was born. You know, Pope goes in and asks Michelangelo, "Oh, who's that?" And because it's Michelangelo's lover, he's like, "Oh, I can't tell the Pope that. That's Jesus."
That's hilarious.
And the Pope's like, "Yeah, that's great." And now everybody's got Michelangelo's gay lover stuck up on their wall.
Yep. I just think that it should be like everybody should be in the bathroom, and then you have a central area where everybody washes their hands.
Yeah.
Ideally, that would be great, but nobody wants to address the elephant in the room that men are predators. I mean, really, like that's like Cody said. I mean, it's the
way that's so prevalent in society. It in so many ways, it's almost like it's encouraged and reinforced.
This is
who you are. You almost
also purity culture does that.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It in reinforces that with purity culture.
Absolutely. There are so many environments that I have been in as a cishet straight man that I had to feel guilty about not being a predator, not wanting to hurt people, not thinking it was cool and to participate in something like that, not want to be an aggressor. But in that environment, I was made to feel, oh, you're not a man then. Oh, you didn't think that was funny? Oh, you're not.
Well, why are you being a woman?
That's survival.
So many things like that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And you do. And that happens to so, so many men where, mm-hmm. where their survival mm-hmm. is in many ways, in some ways dependent upon them becoming this.
A bully.
A bully, mm-hmm. a predator, an aggressor. Mm-hmm. And I mean that. Oh, that breaks my heart so much. I do everything I can to keep my children
right.
out of those kinds of environments because it is. It is so hard to, for so many men, you have to have a certain capacity, a certain space, a certain interactions, experiences, mm-hmm. exposure
right.
to really successfully overcome that mm-hmm. because there's fear attached to it.
Right.
There's fear, there's validation, there's a lot of things mm-hmm. in your life attached to it, especially because for a lot of men, this isn't just coming from friends and their environment. This is coming from dad.
Dad, yeah.
This is coming from grandpa, and in many cases being reinforced by mom.
Oh, very much.
Because it's coming from the church.
Yes.
Because it's coming from the church. And listen, I have been...
Amen.
Look... So one of the things that has kind of come up a lot lately is the socialization within the political parties and with what, at least in this area specifically, that we have a difficult time finding candidates, right? We have a challenging time, like with our membership and maintaining, you know, activity that's not just like, oh my God, our hair's on fire, it's election time, right? Like, consistently engaged throughout the year. And one of the things that I kind of realized was how much the Republican Party models their social, how they do their social interactions based on the church. And it made so much sense to me because when you join a church, generally you're joining because of community or some kind of catastrophic event or a difficult event, divorce, death, da da da, right? That you need some kind of support, right? I say the same thing about politics. Something has to generally have happened to you or affect you to get you really like engaged and involved in politics. So again, catastrophic kind of like something happens, gets you kind of engaged. Then you look for the political party for community, just like you look for a church for community. And just like at a church, they say, well, you know, you really want to stay engaged with church. So coming on Sunday's great, but we have a small group that we want you to, you know, you should do Bible study or small group or whatever it is they call it. And that's once a week. And the next thing you know, your entire social circle is church people. Your kids are heavily engaged with the church people now. You are heavily engaged with the church people now. And it's the Republicans fashion the way they politic in the community the exact same way. And that is part of their success. It is because they build such community, but it's also because those people fall in line because of the social capital and the community, and they don't want to get ostracized from the community. Have you seen that? Like, that's what I've just seen here. Do you feel the same way? You're nodding your head because you're like, I see
no,
that.
No, I definitely do feel the same way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're so rooted in church, right? Like, and so how – Cody has such a great, like, kind of thing with God and, like, trans people. And you know what I mean? And, like, in Florida, obviously, you're getting in – you've got a lot of religious folks.
Yes.
How you probably saw the most of that legislation coming through the legislators, but through the churches, I'm assuming, or like through the churchy folks, the religious folks.
Yes, the churchy folks, the Moms for Liberty.
Mm-hmm, the Moms for Liberty folks. So, yeah. And that's pretty much where they, that's kind of who started that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I sit here and think about how different the country would be if Andrew Gillum had been elected in 2018.
Right. Absolutely.
How much, like, the, and then also at the pandemic, it had been not capitalized on by certain conservative. If we'd had a different president, I think if we had Hillary Clinton and Andrew Gillum, the country would be in such a different, and we could sit here and bemoan that all to the end of time.
Sure.
But I also sit here and wonder, for someone like you who has you know, essentially fled from Florida for, mm-hmm. for their future, for their state, for their family. Where do you see the future of these things going? Like, where do you see other states, or how bad do you think it's going to get? Or what are you worried about? What's do you see?
When I first moved here, and, you know, still ongoing, my whole thing is I refuse to sit back and let this turn into another Florida mm-hmm. without, like, making sure I'm doing everything I can.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
So
don't Florida my Virginia.
Exactly. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I'm fighting to get my Florida back because, yes, a lot of conservatives move there. There's a lot of progressive folks, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are a lot of people that are actually sick of
the theatrics, culture, politics. I think you're seeing it a little bit. You are.
Because, I mean, that's how I always envision Florida. Right. Like mm-hmm. that was part of the hard thing with DeSantis and everything like that is because to me, I mean, Birdcage.
Oh, Birdcage. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's always been, that's kind of how you envision very progressive, you know, the beaches in Miami, all of that. And so
Key West, but Key West is literally like a conservative. It's the redneck Riviera. It is a conservative vacationing spot. And you want to know why? Because it's the only place that they can go and feel like they're not in the United States, but they're not around brown people.
Yep.
That's 100% why I went to Key West once. I hated it. I hated every single second I was there. It was a terrible experience for me. The energy there is god awful. Like, it's terrible. And you know what really bothered me the most was that Key West, you know, because what we see with, and we thought it was such a, you know, accepting place.
Yeah, you look at Florida as like a great place for old people and LGBT people is how my whole life Florida has been presented.
But you know what I noticed in Key West? It was Key West is like the Vegas for conservatives. They go there and they let their freak flag fly. And what happens in Key West stays in Key West. And that is what disgusts me. They fetishize LGBTQ plus people. And then you have the LGBTQ plus people who live there and really honestly are allowing these conservatives who come in and do that. And they fetishize that community and they act a fool. And then they go home and they pass legislation like the anti-trans and, you know, don't say gay bills and stuff like that. It's the hypocrisy for me. And it's just kind of sad. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, it just really is like, it's just sad that we're at a place now where you have, you know, I feel the same way. We just went to Asheville like 2 weeks ago. So it's like Florida, my feelings about Florida were similar to yours, Cody. And like, I went to Asheville a couple weeks ago and 10 years ago, Asheville was a different place. Wealthy, white, I don't know. Like, it's like the RFK type folks have kind of taken over. You know, the people that say that, you know, you go so far left, you circle back around.
If you go so far left, you get your guns back.
Well, but I like literally am a gun owner. And so I like made that. I kind of would make that comment about myself, too. But
also, same.
But like, but also I was like, ooh, now I don't feel good like that because it does. It's weird. They're like they're neocons, I guess. But they at one point were supposedly left. And it's just you're starting to kind of see that. A little bit everywhere. You're Key West, but it's a redneck Riviera.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be seeing Florida anytime soon.
I won't. And then I feel bad when I say I'm boycotting Florida and Tennessee and places like that because I'm like, there are great people there that are working and trying to make a living. And then, like, my tourism dollars are helping support these families that don't have the means to move out of the state because there are so many people that cannot leave Florida and they mm-hmm. are stuck there, which is why I understand why you're still like you had to move here, but you're still fighting for Florida.
Yeah. I mean, because I have family there. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. half of them are Republicans.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my parents are not.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I miss them tremendously.
Right.
But, you know, Virginia is my home now. I'm not moving back to Florida.
Yeah.
But I still want to return it to a safe place to go and visit.
Yeah.
So, you know, one good thing that's happened is they walked back. Don't say gay. They walked back, you know.
Good part of that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think what you're seeing, because there's always, you know, you can always see two scenarios where this go. Mm-hmm. You have the it just keeps getting more and more extreme until we have the Civil War and all of that. But I think most people are a little bit more level-headed and practical mm-hmm. than that.
Yeah.
And I think some of what we're seeing is that some of these people have gotten what they've asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And now other people are starting to see what that really is.
Correct.
And it wasn't what they're saying it was.
What that looks like in practice.
What mm-hmm. that looks like in reality.
Yeah.
You know right. what I mean? Yep. It's one thing
they're
to
like,
be like,
it sounds good.
Exactly. But it's one thing to be like, oh, it seems like this and this should mix together. It's another thing to take a bite.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're eating it.
Mm.
And they're starting to realize those things maybe don't taste so good.
A shit sandwich is a shit sandwich.
No matter what you right. put on it. Well, Heather, so now that you've moved here, how are you splitting your time between the two? Like, how are you kind of getting involved now here in Virginia that you've gotten kind of settled here? When did you move back?
It will be a year. And on the 28th.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
What are you doing up here now? Like, how was your...
Well, I mean, I'm still, like I said, mm-hmm. I am working remotely on some things in mm-hmm. Florida. My partner handles a lot of the on-the-ground stuff.
Okay.
I go back as needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I'm working on getting 4 people elected to city council in Florida. But here it's just basically seeking out folks that I can help.
Mm-hmm.
Have one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited about that.
Yep.
Just finding the right candidates.
Right. Right.
Meeting mm-hmm. with some more next week, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That are running for Chesapeake.
Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see mm-hmm. how that goes.
See how that goes. Okay. Very good.
See if we vibe.
Yes. Do you guys have any more questions for Heather?
Would you ever support a Republican candidate for office if that Republican candidate was a trans woman who was play acting?
No.
Okay, damn.
Never.
But to say, I was like, I really need someone to help me run as a Republican and fuck the shit. Sorry.
Thea wants to run a shadow campaign.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The secret.
Okay. She goes in as a Republican mm-hmm. and gets mm-hmm. gets all of that. And
I
then...
could do the grift so hard for 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They could even play this clip and I would still be like, nah, God's guns, Jesus. Yep. Like, I just feel like all be all hard into it. It'd be great.
God, guns, Jesus.
Just saying, Caitlyn Jenner's already opened that space up.
There
for
are me. Lanes. Yep.
She has.
There are lanes.
There.
Blair White's like been doing work. If she's gonna shovel all that shit out the way, I might as well just
look. Listen. I just no. Just no.
Okay, fine. Calm down.
No.
It was a joke. I apologize.
No, I know. Sincerely no, a joke. It's funny. It's really funny because I look at how much the Republicans try to infiltrate the Democratic Party mm-hmm. and do successfully, right? But like. Nobody, well,
and they're consultants.
Well, I'm not going to say nobody goes the other way because I don't believe that they were that way to begin with. The Democrat, that North Carolina Democrat, I can't remember her name, that right. flipped over, you know what I mean, to give them the supermajority. Mm-hmm. But like, she ran on all progressive stuff and then flipped to Republican. But I just have a really difficult time believing that anyone that would be as forward-thinking of someone who supports Democratic policies would be able to reverse course to 1982.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, you did bring up union. You did some work for unions. And I went to a collective bargaining. Collective bargaining is on the table here in Virginia Beach big time. And there's opposition because, you know, I mean, hello. We're in a purple, reddish district. I sat in this collective bargaining, and there were the organizer brought 2 anti-labor speakers to make sure that they had
both sides
represented.
Ooh.
Yeah, huge political mistake. Anyways, might cost her a mayoral campaign for sure. But I sat there listening to the anti-labor folks And I was like, how are these talking points still working 40 years later? Well, they're not working anymore, really. They're not working as, you know, I mean, people, even people who are not like in unions are starting to be like, I mean, there's huge pay disparity and you really aren't addressing that. And you really haven't addressed how we got here. And, but it, like, these anti-labor people, it's like they rode in their time machine to the collective bargaining meeting. And they were spewing all this 1982 stuff. Like, I don't understand how it's still working.
Well, because their whole strategy is based around people not being educated.
Yep.
That's why they spend much time bashing education and bashing educated people and turning words like intellectual into intellectual.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yeah.
I mean, it's really, I mean.
At its core,
At its core, they encourage and promote and in some ways create social structures that enforce the people that they lead.
The Patreon.
Or whatnot, into being educated. Then they count on that lack of education so that they can just say basically whatever they want, even if it's not true or supported at all.
No, you're totally right.
And those people will just go, uh-huh. They got the clipboard. They have to know the things.
Yep.
It's always the clipboard.
It's always the clipboard. It's
always,
it is.
Always the clipboard.
You know, speaking of education, I feel like this is an awesome opportunity because it's been great as interviewing you. But going into our next segment, we have a new segment. It's one we've been talking about working on for now. We actually call it Historic Gays and Theys.
No.
So I can share a little bit of the educational factor here. This week, we actually have a story together. If you haven't heard this one before, come along with me. The Compton Cafeteria's riot in August 1966 was a significant early LGBTQ uprising in American history, catalyzing trans activism in San Francisco. Transgender individuals facing social abandonment and police harassment often gathered at Compton's cafeteria, enduring discrimination and a specific service fee. Following a protest organized by Vanguard, tensions escalated, leading to the confrontation where a trans woman threw a coffee at a police officer, which sparked a riot. The next day, trans individuals and LGB allies picketed the restaurant and continued protest. Historian Susan Stryker describes this as a pivotal moment marking the first collective militant resistance by LGBTQ plus individuals against police harassment in the U.S. The riot spurred the establishment of the National Transsexual Counseling Unit, NTCU, and the first peer-run advocacy group for trans people amidst the broader wave of trans activism in San Francisco.
Nice.
So let's make sure that we're always fighting for the education, but also that we never forget that the reason we can be here today, the reason we can be activists today is because so many other people have fought endlessly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So let's all remember those historic gays and theys.
Oh my gosh, that's such a good. I love that. I am so excited that we're going to do historic gays and theys. We've been trying to incorporate that in, and you nailed it.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Heather. It's been really great. I hope you stick around. I'm just going to go over some news stories because I would love to get your thoughts.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. First one we're going to talk about. So Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama are introducing bills to define sex in a manner that excludes transgender individuals, potentially affecting birth certificates, driver's licenses, bathroom access, and more.
I hate that.
I know. The bills, dubbed the Women's Bills of Rights, like plural bills, y'all.
States' rights, clearly.
Women's Bills of Rights, by their supporters, fall far short of actually protecting women's rights. They fail to protect access to birth control or abortion, do not ensure equitable pay, neither allocate funds for nor promote women's athletics. Oh, but I thought they cared so much about women's sports. And lack any provisions designed to curb violence against women, which, by the way, 98% of violence against women is at the hands of men. Instead, they categorize sex based on reproductive capabilities and ends legal recognition of transgender individuals' gender identities. But there are intersex people.
So a big part of what I'm seeing when I look at these bills in different states, all right, is you have many of states passing that bill, but these bills are being partnered with several other bills, right? So you have these bills being partnered with drag bills, right? Anti-drag bills. And what you'll find in a lot of the anti-drag bills is a specific wording, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that performance is for consideration or not. Mm-hmm. Right? You understand what that means? That means whether you were actually performing somebody or for somebody or not. All right. Oh. So when you eliminate the legal recognition of trans people, the law no longer recognizes this person as a trans person. What do they become in the eyes of the law?
In the eyes of the law.
Okay. The eyes of the law, they become a person in drag.
Oh.
And when you make it illegal
to
perform in drag, whether for consideration or not.
You make it illegal to exist.
You make
as
it
a trans
illegal
person.
To be in public. As a trans person.
In Tennessee, that's...
And they're going even farther with it. And you're seeing this in states like Missouri, where...
It's on my... Oh, wait. No, it's not on my list.
Where you're seeing them actually change and try to change different provisions in their law. Not only just in like... And they're using criminal laws and laws that are attached to like prison systems and things like that, where... They started using words like, you know, what is it when you contributing to the delinquency of a minor?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Contributing to the transition, to the social transition of a minor, or contributing to somebody's social transition. And that can be as simple as using that person's preferred name and pronouns. All right. And they are labeling that as an actual sexual assault crime. Teachers will have to register as sex offenders if they use their students' preferred name or pronouns for contributing to the social transition of a minor.
That is...
And so now they're starting to pass laws that will not only make it illegal to be just in public as a trans person, but will also make you, if you support trans people in any way, they will make you a sex offender.
What in the world? These legislators, I mean, this is not the foundation of America. Like,
they want to isolate us. They want us alone. They want us scared. And they want us dead.
The very next thing they're going to start doing, and you're going to see this, you're going to see this in bills like the one that Tennessee passed in 2019, trying to establish marriage as solely between a man and a woman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, in Virginia, our constitution still says that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see them start passing, like they did in Tennessee recently, passed a provision that said you can just deny marrying somebody if you don't believe that they should be married. Correct. You could do that. Well, what they're doing with some of those laws is they're passing laws that they know are going to get challenged.
Oh, yeah. Because they want to go to the Supreme Court.
They wanted to go to the Supreme Court because so all they need is one precedent of because God said so.
Right.
Once they have one Supreme Court upheld precedent of because God said so, then from there, that the wall separating church and state ceases to exist. Mm-hmm. That's a bomb on it. Mm-hmm. And those states, once they have that, those states can then become theocracies and enact whatever laws they want based on because God said so.
Right. Correct.
Mark my words, because the bloodshed that will follow from that, not for me, I'll be hiding. I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I'll be hiding. But I'm just saying it's going to be obvious.
Right. No, 100%.
Obvious. It is literally the purpose and the conception of having a confederacy of secular states. It is. You can't look at this in any other way. The way we were talking about, they're trying to dismantle the public education. Mm-hmm. You cannot look at this as the American conservative is doing anything other than trying to dismantle foundations. So you said, it's not America.
Right. It's
and
not
they
America.
Know that's not America. And it doesn't matter.
And they're all like small government, but they're like, let me tell you what to do and let me pass laws. And so some of these, there's some bills, some that are active right now. No, that was awesome. No, that was great because you actually brought up states that were not in my list. So talking about legislation. So, you know, you just heard Cody talking about Missouri and Tennessee. Well, in Louisiana, House Bill 608, so this is state-sponsored legislation, sponsored by 63 Republicans, aims to restrict bathroom access in schools, prisons, and shelters. A critical section of the bill references existing law on gender definitions, potentially prohibiting changes to birth certificates and licenses. While not yet scheduled for a hearing, the bill's significant support suggests rapid advancement once proceedings commence. In Mississippi, Senate Bill 2753 and House Bill 1607 have successfully passed their respective chambers. So those are the companion bills. The House Bill 1607 defines sex based on reproductive capacity and puzzlingly states that for transgender individuals, equal does not mean same or identical.
Well, yeah, that's exactly that. That is
wow.
A reach back
wow.
into the segregation
yep.
laws.
It's literally, it is literally
that, not, that's verbatim like out separate, of segregation.
Right, separate, equal. In Alabama, House Bills 111 and 130 similarly target transgender individuals. House Bill 111 specifies sex based on reproductive capacity for all vital statistics purposes. Meanwhile, now,
let me ask you about what? That reproductive capacity.
Right.
So, like, does that mean if you're infertile, you're a man?
Right. Right. Also, reproductive capacity.
100%. How can you know that I can't have a baby? They haven't even tried.
You saw
this. I want to see these senators that, try to get me pregnant and prove that it's not possible.
The manta ray?
Because they can't mm-hmm. prove otherwise.
Arnold Schwarzenegger had one in junior. They've been working on it for a while.
So meanwhile, HB 130, although not directly defining sex, will reportedly be amended to add language that extends don't say gay legislation to space camp. This addition comes after conservative media expressed outrage over a transgender individual being employed at the state's renowned space camp and could be used to target transgender employees in state facilities. So far, only 5 states have passed similar legislation: Kansas, Montana, North Dakota, Tennessee, and Utah. In Kansas, a judge has recently ruled in favor of Attorney General Kris Kobach that driver's license and birth certificates must contain transgender people's old assigned sex at birth, citing the law there. Meanwhile, although such a law does not exist in Florida, rules changes have resulted in a lack of ability for transgender people to change their driver's licenses. Reportedly, Florida residents are unable to change their birth certificates as well. Additionally, Oklahoma and Nebraska have executive orders defining sex similarly. So these are states that are passing laws that are affecting people. And that's exactly why, like, you moved out of Florida and stuff like this. And there are so many people that are trapped in these states.
Like, in Florida, there was a whole process. One of the people at the Southern Poverty Law Center had put out a guide for Florida, like, mm-hmm. step by step, to tell you exactly what you needed to do to get your gender marker changed, to mm-hmm. get a new birth certificate, mm-hmm. to get a new driver's license, to get your name changed.
Yeah.
Now the first step on that list is move to Colorado or California.
Yeah. And now, you know, my daughter was born in Florida.
Yeah.
How are we going to change that birth certificate?
Man.
Do you think the feds could step in? Is there any precedent for a federal birth certificate? I don't think so. It's almost always by the state, right?
It's by the state, yeah. And your social security number. I think they've changed this now, but the social security number used to be also, like, given by the state you were born in or whatever, assigned, like, your numerical. Like, mine – well, I should say when you got it. Like, I didn't get mine until the 80s, and we already lived in Virginia. So my social security number is a Virginia social security, like, the first 3. But I was born in Ohio. But my dad didn't – get my social security number assigned to me, because now they're automatically assigned it, like, when you're born. But when I was when dinosaurs roamed the earth,
could you just tell me that social security number one more time?
Sorry. In other news, yesterday Reuters released an article that the NCAA is being sued over prize money restriction. I got the wrong article. Over the prize money, not that one. Hold on. Let me get inside higher ed. So we've got college athletes sue it's been a bad week for the NCAA over trans eligibility policies. More than a dozen former and current college athletes, former ones too, recently sued the NCAA. The lawsuit accused the NCAA of violating their Title IX rights by allowing University of Pennsylvania swimmer Leah Thomas, a transgender woman, to participate in the 2022 National Championships, the Associated Press reported. The lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in Atlanta last week argues that the NCAA's transgender eligibility policies revised in 2022 to align with national sports governing bodies adversely impact female athletes in violation of Title IX. It seeks to prevent the NCAA from applying these policies at upcoming events in Georgia. A third phase of the revised policies is expected to be implemented in the 2024-2025 academic year and adds national and international governing body standards to the NCAA rules. The suit also names the University System of Georgia as a defendant because the 2022 championships took place at Georgia Tech. Thomas was the first openly transgender athlete to win a Division I title in any sport. She won the 500-yard freestyle in 2022 and reached the finals in two other events, the 200-yard freestyle and the 100-yard freestyle. She previously competed for the Penn men's team before her transition. One plaintiff, former Kentucky swimmer Riley Gaines.
Riley Gaines should be thanking Georgia, thanking the NCAA, thanking the transgender athlete that won one race. Because nobody would know or give a crap about who she was.
That's right. Yep. And she tied for fifth place with Leah Thomas.
I'm like, you're mad you tied for fifth.
Exactly.
Nobody would know you even existed except for your parents and your friends if it weren't for all of that. Yep. So she should be thanking every single one of them for any notoriety that she has at all.
Yep. But Riley Gaines, she's built different.
But she's just built different.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself.
I know. Thomas got fifth place trophy. The plaintiffs also include volleyball players and track athletes. College sports are the premier stage for women's sports in America. And while the NCAA does not comment on pending litigation, the association and its members will continue to promote Title IX, make unprecedented investments in women's sports, and ensure fair competition in all NCAA championships, they said in a statement.
I don't know. Also, it kind of shows, too, that out of the thousands of college athletes they are, that exist out there and have played, they found 13.
Right.
And probably searched real hard for them.
And I bet you all of them are tied to Republican politicians.
In the same Facebook group.
It's so sexist. No matter which way you cut it, when you define a human being based off of their sex, what else do we call it than sexism? Like when you're coming out and you're saying, oh, this just trans woman who I see, who Riley Gaines sees as a man, you're saying, oh, well, men are just better inherently, that it's not fair, all these sort of things, which is inherent sexism inside of what, but then also it's like completely disregarding the fact that Leah Thompson is a woman, has gone through all of the different hormone therapies, and then also was not even sitting there dominating the competition. She's just another woman competing. It's just unbelievable.
Right.
To me.
And I mean, I'm making the assumption that the NCAA has their requirements for trans athletes. You have to be on hormone replacement therapy for a minimum of 2 years. You've got to have blood work, bone density, all of those things. I don't know the rules specifically, but I mean, with NCAA, but I mean, these are guidelines that are set and approved by the people that are professionals and are actually athletes themselves who are basically writing these guidelines and policies. And you're not trying to protect – you've never cared at all about women's sports.
No.
And nobody's saying anything about trans men in sports.
No.
You don't care about the trans woman there's a trans man that's a boxer. There's probably a trans woman boxer, too, in women's categories. Like, I don't know, probably. Well, but there's a trans man that's like a professional boxer and won titles, and nobody's saying shit.
And that's the thing, is a lot of this just supports a lot of this mindset comes from the fragile male ego.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Because, like, in what world do I admit that some woman's going to beat me at basketball I mean –
yeah.
But the reality is this, is just because you're a man doesn't mean you're an athlete.
Mm-mm. Correct.
All right. Not every man is 6'2" and can shoot from the 3-point line. And I promise every single one of those NCAA swimmers would have beat my ass in that pool.
Right. And just because you're a woman doesn't mean you're not an athlete.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Right.
Also, just think about it. Okay, Leah Thomas, she took estrogen and she grew tits.
Yeah.
That's going to create more drag in the water. Listen, I don't want to have... I'm sorry. Listen, this is a comedy special now. I apologize. I'm sorry.
But true. I'm just saying...
It makes you remind me about how a trans man one time, after the top surgery, they're like, I am now the most aerodynamic I've ever been in my entire life. It's like... It's true. But I digress.
And then they like feel like baby seals because they have to shave their entire bodies. But anyways.
I just think it's funny, you know, how many like just people that regularly ride bikes.
Yeah.
Like you just ride the bike through around. Do you really, really need to be wearing spandex just all the time? Like just regular shorts don't work for you. You're trying to cut like a tenth of the second off of your standard Saturday bike ride. Yeah. Is that what's...
They also shave their legs too.
That was exactly what I told everybody.
It just seems a lot of work to put into something you're not competing for. Like that's all I'm saying. Like if there's no prize attached to it, I'm not shaving anything. Agreed. And regular gym shorts will do the trick for me.
You nailed it. So
just taking it way too serious. That's all.
I mean, I do think that there should be something said about how disgusting, vile people are weaponizing the judicial system. And I mean, this stuff is so strategically planned out, and they've been doing this since the 60s.
Even before that.
I mean, even before that. But I mean, I feel like the civil rights movement, I mean, they really have just used the judicial system, but it's just
the 13th Amendment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For me at this point, they've ruined everything, and this is why we can't have nice things.
I know.
This is why we can't have a nice country.
That's right. We need to expand the court. But the problem is that these changes, the only thing we can get Congress to do right now is a TikTok bill to ban TikTok. They're the most ineffective Congress that this country has ever had. They aren't actually doing their job to include Democrats. But Democrats and Republicans can all come together for some insider fucking trading.
On TikTok,
On TikTok, because that's what this whole thing is about. They don't care about our data security. They don't care about any of that shit.
They don't care about influencing.
Did
you see what was trending at the top? That's what they want to stop.
The political
Palestine.
That it's 100% Palestine.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because TikTok 100% has exposed Israel.
Absolutely.
It has exposed Israel.
And we can go into the for sale. We could talk about the specific individuals who are at the top of the for sale, the individuals who are
Steve Mnuchin trying to get the investors.
Naming names. We could name three other fellows. But regardless, it's obvious that there's a political agenda. And it's obvious all of these folks who are okay with it, all these people who are concerned about free speech, they were talking about cancel culture, all the same exact stuff. They have no problem making it illegal for me to go outside, go to the bathroom. They have no problem banning kicking people off, enabling hate speech here, but then banning the use of pronouns and respect and things for other people. It is always the most cynical game because for I think what's come is a lot of Republicans or quote unquote conservatives. It is a game.
It's 100%. It's a game.
Not a game.
It's not a game. And I was saying this today, the Republican I was talking to was like, he's so like idealistic and like I just want to be able to have like my friends and like, you know, and have and talk to people and both sides. And I'm like, no, like, dude, you're missing it. The problem is that Republicans look at this like this is the NFL and that you can be on an opposing team and you can still be friends, because at the end of the day, sports fans can absolutely do that. Right. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about policy that is affecting people's lives, and it's not a fucking game. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem. That's the problem in our social, you know what I mean? Trying to save your social face. And they're trying to play it like a sports team. And the Republicans, they'll do anything to win. And there are Democrats that will do anything to win too. I'm not saying, but like,
oh, yeah.
at the at the core, we need people that are trying to actually make policy and actually work and not take a fucking $200,000 salary and all the bennies that come with being in Congress or the Senate or lifetime benefits.
But babe, show me a hero and I'll show you a tragedy.
I mean, it's the truth. Well, I mean, they will just assassinate whoever is trying to make systemic change.
That's the core of the Republican-Democratic Party relationship, mm-hmm. right? As you, Republicans are like the bully friend.
They are the bully friend.
They're the bully friend. And the Democrats are like the nice kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans are like, oh.
Or the popular ones.
He'll give me his lunch. He's nice.
Right.
So I'll just go take it from him.
Republicans were kids that weren't popular in school. Yeah.
And so you kind of have this dynamic where on the Democrat side, you have like, oh, well, I want to win, but I don't want to hurt that person to win. That's not right. That's right. And so it's real easy for Republicans to be like, oh yeah, we could be friends afterwards because you were actually never trying to kill me. I'm trying to kill you.
Yeah,
but I'm trying to kill you. So we should shake hands when we're done.
Mm-hmm.
But that really always has been the dynamic of, the bully
mm-hmm.
picking on the nice person, mm-hmm. trying to do all of that. And then what you see too, so infuriating, right? Is then the nice kid finally gets fed up, punches the bully in the face,
mm-hmm.
and you get the whole, oh,
yeah,
that was so violent and evil of you,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know, mm-hmm. coming out behind the.
I can't even sit here listening to this. It's like it reminds me what happened to next. It reminds me mm-hmm. of what people mm-hmm. are saying about that. The mm-hmm. idea that you get to a point where you're being bullied, and all of a sudden you do anything, you just pour a cup of water on someone.
Mm-hmm.
You just say an evil word back to them next, it justifies. And it's part of the game ultimately that they play with this politeness politics. It's mm-hmm. well documented. You can probably read better analysis of this by like black women and like people who have been experiencing the harsh realities of having to play to a certain standard of mm-hmm. politeness and politics just to have any sort of access. And I think that, you know, today we have it a lot better, but they found new ways to shift their cruelty. They found new ways to couch their racism, their homophobia, their sexism. And it's what's really galling to me is that despite the fact they found these new ways, they're running out of ways.
They are running out of ways.
They're running out of solutions, policies, anything that they can push.
Which
so they
is
just
why
keep going
violence.
More and more.
Yeah,
let's make America great again, y'all. Let's do it because we'll just go back to that, time.
You can see they're running out of ways by just the logic faults in almost all of their statements mm-hmm. contain these logic faults.
And the
faults.
Anger that comes when they're challenged
mm-hmm.
and you blow holes in their entire facade. Like you literally blown holes through it. And they get angry and emotional, and that's how we're gonna see violence. And I mean, literally, Trump just was like, it's gonna be a bloodbath, you know. I mean, he is prepping people. Now, the beauty is that I am a gun owner, and I don't know why so many conservatives think that, like, no one on the left has guns.
Right? I do too.
I'm like, I don't know why you think this. A Republican's face is always really surprised when I'm like, I'm a gun owner.
Just
because
we didn't carry him around with us at the baseball game that you were at?
Right, because like, I'm not walking into Wawa packing?
You didn't see it at me at the barber shop or while I was walking around
unlocked.
The mall, so I must not have one?
Right.
We don't take the family Christmas photo around the tree with our rifles.
No, I just don't consider it a fashion statement. I only take it out when I'm going to shoot somebody.
Exactly.
I'm hesitant to say it, but you know, obviously I'm a gun owner as well. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I remember there was discussion about classifying trans people as being mentally disabled or visually mm-hmm. deficient, and specifically the way in which the state can then utilize some of the gun control laws to take away guns from folks that they think are mentally these are different angles that have been tried and will be continually tried by conservatives, because it was never about gun rights either for them.
No.
A lot of time it's about control.
It's about control.
And anybody who pays attention to this, if you believe you are a good faith conservative and you're listening to this conversation just fuming, you know, for whatever reason, and you think to yourself, these people really have a base. It's not a game for them. You can find time and time again the hypocrisy, and not mm-hmm. a sort of hypocrisy that can just easily be overlooked. It's a type of hypocrisy you have to not look for. You have to put up blinders for. And I don't know. We as a country need to do better before we get worse.
And you're, in regards to like owning guns, that's what you can't own if you're a felon.
That's right.
Guess what you will be
in these states with these laws if you were a trans person or,
you'll be a felon.
Or even
you
an ally vote. In some of you these states.
Yep, can't vote, can't have guns. Well, on that note, thank you so much, Heather, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I think we will wrap it up right here for tonight. Thank you, Cody, and thank you, Thea. That's very lovely.
Absolutely.
Thank you, producer Ty.
Thank you, Melissa. You and all the things.
And all of our listeners out there, never forget, trans joy beats hate every time.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Collective Tattoo and the Kalos Coalition. We are listener supported, so if you like the show, please consider donating to us on Patreon at patreon.com/talkingtransparency. Like, share, and subscribe across social media, and be sure to visit our Linktree at linktree.com/talkingtrans.